Jesus the good teacher, Jesus the therapist, Jesus the giver of bling. The Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? 12 False Christs. It's written by regular guest Dr. Matt Richard. Read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or purchase Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? By calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You might call him a man of action, Elisha the prophet. He's connected with his predecessor, Elijah, in a tangible way. The spirit of Elijah is, and the mantle of Elijah is literally cast upon Elisha, and the ministry that was begun there with the prophet Elijah is continued in the prophet Elisha. But in what sense is he a prophet? It's not like you can go to your Old Testament and open up the book of Elisha and see the prophecies that he was uttering, the oracles of God that he was uttering. What do we need to know about and remember about this Old Testament prophet Elisha? We'll answer that question and others with Dr. Kevin Golden here on Issues Etc. He joins us to talk about Elisha as the church remembers him. He's pastor of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, a suburb of St. Louis, and author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Hosea. Dr. Golden, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you, Todd.
It's not like you can go to the Old Testament and find the book of Elisha like you can Jeremiah or Ezekiel or Isaiah or the other writing prophets. He's kind of more of an action figure than an author. In what sense, then, is he a prophet?
Well, when it comes to a prophet, the term itself simply speaks to the fact that one speaks on behalf of God. So the word of the Lord is delivered to him. He then communicates it to those around him. And so while Elisha most certainly is known for a lot of miraculous work that the Lord does through his hands, he also can be rightly described as prophet because he speaks the word of the Lord on behalf of the Lord, and that word is effective. He's simply being the mouthpiece for the Lord.
Set the context for him historically. Old Testament history can be a bit of a labyrinth for the average person. Where would you put him in the Old Testament history?
He is largely, if you want to look at a timeline, in the latter part of the 9th century B.C. So this is in the time, in the generations following the reign of David as well as Solomon. And you may recall that during the reign, following the reign of Solomon, that the kingdom of Israel splits in two. You end up with the southern kingdom of Judah, which is centered around Jerusalem. Then you have the northern kingdom of Israel. And from that point on, after the time of Solomon, really our prophets, that's when they mainly come into sway, and they become known as either southern prophets or northern prophets, depending upon which area they were concentrated in. And the most famous of all the prophets, Isaiah, he'd rightly be called a southern prophet because that's where he is focused. He's down in Jerusalem speaking to the people of Judah and such. Elisha, on the other hand, would be a northern prophet. That's really where his prophetic ministry is focused, is up north amongst the people of the northern kingdom of Israel.
So what's happening in Israel, the northern kingdom, while Elisha is speaking the word of the Lord and doing the miracles in God's name?
There is ongoing challenges within the nation of Israel. A big part of it deals with unfaithful kings, both those who preceded the prophetic ministry of Elisha, then also those who are during the prophetic ministry of Elisha, so that the Lord is looking to call his people to repentance. And this is one of the things that really makes Elisha stand out, but it also puts him in line with his predecessor, Elijah, is that both of them were very much engaged with the political situation of the day. But while that maybe is a good reminder to us that while Lutherans are at times known for a bit of quietism when it comes to political matters, that's really not the direction we should go. There is a place for us to speak, but while we shouldn't give in to quietism, we should also learn from Elisha that what he's really addressing is the apostasy of northern kings and such, that they were not being faithful to lead God's people in the one true faith, remaining loyal to the Lord, but instead were tolerating Baal. This was all the more evident during his predecessor's ministry, Elijah, who famously went toe-to-toe with King Ahab, who's king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and along with Ahab, his wife Jezebel, whose name precedes her in its notoriety. But the constant thing was about faithfulness to the Lord, and that's what was driving it. We have a little bit different situation today, obviously, where our government is not called upon specifically to be the ones to keep us faithful to the Lord. Rather, that's what you're supposed to expect from your congregation, your pastor, and such.
So let's talk about that connection he has to Elijah, because it looks an awful lot like what God had begun through Elijah, he purposefully continues in an unbroken sense, although Elijah is taken away, he continues it through Elijah.
That's very true. In fact, when Elijah is taken up, our listeners will remember that specifically a double portion of Elijah's spirit is placed upon Elisha. And that emphasizes the fact that just as Elijah himself did not go about his great work by his own authority, by his own ability, but simply he was the Lord's mouthpiece, the Lord's hands to accomplish what he desired, the same is true of Elisha. And having received that double portion of the Spirit, he in many ways kind of outshines Elijah. So he has that great connection. And you can see a lot of what Elisha does is very similar to what you saw going on with Elijah. Elijah is famous, for example, that he goes to Zarephath in the midst of a great famine. This is a northern town that is even beyond the scope of Israel. It's into kind of pagan territory. And there's a widow and her son, and they're about to die from starvation. And the Lord works through the hand of Elijah so that the flour and their oil never run out day to day, so they always have enough for bread so that they're able to keep going. You have something similar that goes on with Elisha, except there it's yet another situation where you have a widow. She's destitute. She cannot pay the bills that she owes. But what she starts doing is starts pouring oil out of a jar into various other containers, and it keeps coming and keeps coming and keeps coming until she has enough that she can then sell and have the necessary funds that she needs to pay off debts. The Lord does very similar things through them both. Both of them, there was the raising of a woman's son that was done both through Elijah's ministry, also through Elisha's. So there's that strong connection between them.
Now, the context religiously here, we spoke briefly about the political context, which can't be separated, as you said, from the religious one, but the religious context is Baal worship. Can you explain
Correct.
What this religion was and how it manifested itself in the idolatry of the northern kingdom?
So this is partly a result of the fact that when the people of Israel came into the promised land, they did not fully remove those who had possessed the land prior to them. And so there was this constant source of temptation to give in to the idolatry of these other groups, the Canaanites and such. And so Baal was one of the more prominent ones. And Baal was understood to be the god of the sky, that when you were on the good side of Baal, you could make sure that you had rain coming your direction and such, so that you wanted to be on his good side simply for fertility. Well, Baal also had a female consort, the goddess Asherah, who was understood to be kind of the goddess of the earth. And so what you wanted was the rain to come forth from Baal to water the earth, and then that would be Asherah, who would then bring forth in fruitfulness and such. And they, in the Canaanite setting, they understood that in very sexual terms. They understood that this was, if you will, a copulation between Baal with the rain coming forth, and then also Asherah, the goddess of the earth. And so the thought was, one of the ways that you keep that going is that you engage in such things yourself. So they had sacred prostitution as a way to which is a bit of an oxymoron, but that would be a way that would kind of promote and stay on Baal's good side. This is partly Elijah faces this big, because this is what Ahab and his wife Jezebel, who by her upbringing, by her very nature, is a worshiper of Baal and Asherah. This is what they're promoting in Israel, and it still has not been completely removed at the time of Elisha, so he is still grappling with this as well.
So that explains famines, doesn't it? God's judgment of famines.
That's exactly right. When the Lord brings the famine, it is essentially the Lord saying, if you don't want to trust in me, if you want to trust in Baal for rain and trust in Asherah for a fertile ground, well, I'll let you trust in them. I'm not going to send you anything. Let's see how much they provide. And then this was specifically during the ministry of Elijah, that they have a 3.5-year famine, and then that famously comes to an end on Mount Carmel, where you have this competition between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, where they build altars and pour water on it and call out to their respective gods for a fire to come down and consume it.
Talk a little bit about, and I think you'd mentioned it in passing before, but the more famous account of Elisha is probably healing Naaman the Syrian from his leprosy. There's a lot going on in that particular account, more than just a miraculous healing. There's kind of a play back and forth about who, you know, what God is going to accomplish this and how it's going to be accomplished.
Yeah, so Naaman is not from the people of God. He is a Syrian, so that when he is told by a servant who is from Israel that there's this great prophet, he thinks, well, maybe this will be the means by which I can be relieved of my leprosy. When he gets sends word for Elisha to do something, Elisha never really addresses him face-to-face, but really does this from a distance. And this also points to yet a bigger thing, that just like Elisha follows in the shoes of Elijah, so also both of them are going to be followed later in time by Christ, who's one far greater than Elijah, far greater than Elisha. And so here with Elisha in this situation, he doesn't speak to him, but he just sends the word, much like Christ sends the word to an unbelieving, a pagan military official, namely a centurion, and tells him, hey, I'll be able to heal your servant. So here with Elisha and Naaman balks initially at what Elisha says. Elisha says, hey, go dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan and you'll be cleansed. And he balks at that, saying, hey, we've got far better rivers back home in Syria. Why would I want to go down in that dirty creek, the Jordan, and dip in it? How in the world can that work? So he balks at it at first, but his own servant says to him, hey, if Elisha had told you to do something great, you would have done it. So why not do this little thing? And so eventually Naaman does say, okay, I'll go ahead and do it. And lo and behold, of course, it does work. And a major lesson to take out of this is, it's not in the greatness of the means, but it's the Lord's promise attached to it that you find the greatness. And obviously, there are great theological implications for us today in that you can apply this even to our understanding of holy baptism, that it's not in the greatness of the water, because it's rather normal, nothing fantastic about the water, but it's God's promise, his word attached to the water, that brings and does great things.
We're talking about the prophet Elisha, as the church remembers him on the 14th of June. Dr. Kevin Golden is our guest, pastor of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, a suburb of St. Louis, and author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Hosea. We'll talk a little bit more about that account of Naaman the Syrian and his leprosy right after this.
Stuck in traffic? Waiting in line at the grocery store? Do better than scrolling through pictures of your aunt's chai latte and your friend's distraught statuses regarding the football game on Facebook. Download the digital version of the Lutheran Witness and get your theological fix instead. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Because Christ-centered preaching matters. Because His Word does accomplish that which He purposes. Because hanging out with like-minded Lutherans is important. Hi, I'm Alicia Herman, member of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I invite you to Redeemer. I particularly appreciate Redeemer as a church where God's grace enables us to see that our justification depends not on our performance, but solely on Christ's performance. If you're looking for a Lutheran oasis, where in a changing culture, the message stays the same, visit us in Fort Wayne or at redeemer-fortwayne.org.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at lutheranfcu.org.
A mobile Lutheran Bible study. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Golden, author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Hosea about Elisha the prophet. Dr. Golden, one detail about that famous story of healing Naaman the Syrian from his leprosy is the epilogue, where the servant of the prophet, I can't recall his name, takes the payment that Elisha the prophet had refused from Naaman, and he himself is afflicted with the Syrian's leprosy. What is going on there?
Yes, that does certainly get your attention. And, of course, the thing is this doesn't typically make its way into the Sunday school lesson, maybe for obvious reasons. And even when this pops up in the lectionary, typically this is not included in the reading. But nevertheless, it gets to a matter of the servant stepping outside of his specific call to go beyond what he was called to do. When Naaman first wanted was told by his servant saying, there's this prophet in Israel, you ought to seek out help from him. He initially sent word to the king of Israel saying, hey, I want your prophet to come do this for me. And he sent money, basically, to pay for it. And that distressed the king. Well, Elisha himself is unwilling to take this money because he realizes he's not a gun for hire. He's not in there so to get paid off by whoever he can serve, but rather he's a servant of the Lord. And this is essentially what his servant betrays, is that his servant betrays Elisha's actual identity as a servant of the Lord. He's not a servant of Naaman. He's not a servant of the king of Israel. He's a servant of the Lord, and that's the only one to whom he will answer.
What are we to make of the resurrection account that we find in the annals of the prophet Elisha?
Right. There's two famous ones. One is when he raises a woman's son, but the one that probably is a bit more shocking is that this is after the death of Elisha, and his bones are laying in the grave, and a dead body comes in contact with his bones, and that person comes back to life, which once again speaks rather shockingly about what the Lord had accomplished through him. The most beneficial thing we can do with that account, while it might leave us scratching our heads, is to see that once again this is pointing us forward in time to Christ himself, who at his death, you don't just have one person rising, but at his own death, we have the tombs of many people that are rent asunder, and it's not because they physically touched Jesus, but rather this was the matter of what he accomplished from the cross by means of his death, that he's bringing about life for all people. And so it's a great opportunity for us to look forward to see something far greater that the Lord is doing in the death and resurrection of his own son.
Do we know anything about Elisha himself and how we know of Elijah's departure, dramatic departure from Elisha and being taken up into heaven? Do we know anything of Elisha's?
Just a little bit. What the text of Holy Scripture tells us, and this is in 2 Kings chapter 13, is that he was suffering from some illness, and that illness ended up ending his earthly life. We don't know exactly what it was, but that's a wonderful detail in many ways for us to have, is that in spite of the fact that Elisha was used by the Lord to bring about so many other miraculous healings and other miraculous events, he himself ends up succumbing to some common illness that could not be cured. And it's a good reminder to us that amidst all of the things that are even claimed today by false teachers and such about with proper faith, one will not be afflicted by ailments and you can overcome whatever is set upon you, that here you have somebody who had a double portion of the spirit that had been put on Elijah, and somebody through whom the Lord did incredible things, obviously a pillar for us that we ought to emulate of fidelity, faithfulness to Christ, and yet he succumbs to death simply because of a common disease of some sort.
There's a intriguing account after he is long dead in 2 Kings 13 of a funeral that gets interrupted by, I can't remember, some attack or something like that, and an unexpected resurrection attributed to, of all things, Elisha's corpse.
Yes. Yes, and the thing that I would encourage us to keep in mind, how much can Elijah really do when he's just a corpse? Obviously, nothing. And that emphasizes the fact that this, all along, everything that has been done through the hands of Elisha has not been because of Elisha, but because of the one who sent him, the one who's spirit has been put upon him in a double portion from what had been put upon Elijah. This always gets back to he's the Lord's man. Everything he does is because of the Lord, and therefore, even here when his corpse brings about a resurrection, that's all the more so pointing us to this is all about what the Lord is doing.
And in many ways, a kind of an incomplete, maybe a kind of a distorted foreshadowing of Christ's own resurrection. Talk about, in general terms, how Elisha is, even more so than Elijah, his predecessor, a foreshadowing of Christ himself.
Most certainly so. So both of these prophets were prophets in that they spoke God's word, and Christ himself is the prophet of prophets because he is the Lord himself speaking in the midst of God's people. But also Elisha, just like Christ, was known for doing great miracles. One example would be Elisha has this famous example where he's able to cause an axe head that had fallen into the water to float so that it could be retrieved. Well, Christ does something far greater than that, that it's not an axe head that floats on the water, but it's Christ himself who comes walking on the sea to his disciples. So there, whenever you see Elisha doing something or saying something, when you're reading that, you take a moment and stop and think about how is this seen also in the life of Christ? And when you consider that, you see that Christ does it greater. And that's true with Christ. He's always the one greater than Moses, the one greater than Elijah, the one greater than Elisha, the one greater than Isaiah, who, as he fulfills everything that's promised through Isaiah. Christ is always the one who is greater than the one who came before him.
Dr. Kevin Golden is pastor of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, a suburb of St. Louis, and author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Hosea. Dr. Golden, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
In the last 10 minutes of the program, we're going to spend that talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute about divorce enablers, not just circumstances that enable divorce, but an industry and, she says, a fantasy world about divorce that enables it. We'll be right back.
The Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education invites you to attend our Reformation Summer Conference, July 11 through 13, 2017, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, focused on truth and education. Speakers include the Reverend Rolf Preuss, Dr. Angus Manouge, and Dr. Thomas Korchak. Enjoy this year's unique banquet experience at a Wyoming bison ranch. Visit ccle.org for more speakers and information. At ccle.org.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Religious liberty, Christians engaging the media, the for you of Christianity, Christian marriage, the sexual revolution, the Benedict option. These are some of the topics for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $120. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th, in Houston.